Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
It is time for Football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. We're getting back into the swing of things, coach. We took several weeks off over the very strange holiday run with Christmas and New Year's Day being like in the middle of the week. But now it feels like we're starting to get into a little bit of a rhythm.
Yeah, and we did a show or two. And, you know, I'm up because the players are training and everything early in the morning. But you see this light that's coming through the windows here. And as I drove in, you could see the sunrise. It was amazing this morning. And that, to me, is always that indicator of, like, recruiting's coming to a close. Mm-hmm. Spring ball is going to be here soon. We're on the march in winter conditioning. We're already in week three at that. And it's an exciting time of year to see the young players start to rise up through the program and start to anticipate what they can accomplish in spring ball.
I mean, it's late January, so we're spring ball's kind of creeping up on us. So today it'll be fun. I want to talk to you about the culture of this team and kind of where you sit, because when we started this podcast, you were very much in the process of kind of fixing or cleaning up the culture from the prior situation. So we'll get into some of that, kind of the schedule, what the guys are doing right now, what their day-to-day looks like. And then we're going to start doing each week leading up to spring ball, and we'll probably reset this in the summer, but kind of position groups. And today we're going to look at the offensive line, maybe some key losses or key returners, rather. Yep. Guys, you have big expectations for that kind of thing. So we'll look at the offensive line today. And also a connection story with this. I know it's basketball, but the Alabama Bediako story, kid basically goes to the NBA. He gets drafted. He doesn't play in an actual NBA game, but he plays in G League games. Well, he's going back to college. They're fighting that right now. The judge overseeing it is from Alabama. He's a booster for Alabama. And he's like, no, I think the guy should play. Yet we got a Bear, former Bear, I guess, and Eric Gibson Jr., who's being penalized for going to LSU but not actually playing. And he's not allowed that extra year, not even an extra year if you think about it, in Division I football. So we can go through the connections there, why one player is given that treatment. And it's going to a judge that supports that school that he's going back to. On the other hand, you have an Eric Gibson Jr. being penalized because he was told, hey, come to LSU, play. Oh, never mind, we don't have a spot, but you're already here. And that somehow counts. I think that's a major story, actually. It's a major one. We've talked a lot about it. But
garbage.
It's awful. It's awful. Yeah. I mean, it's so sad, honestly, the way we've gone there. The reason kind of we're getting into the culture stuff, yesterday was fascinating. I had the two-man game podcast that we do with Coach Steve Smiley. Yeah. Certainly, they're in a little bit of a tough spot right now in their season. And we find out, you know, I have the Brock Wisney show, so I'm talking to Brock. And he says on the air yesterday, Quinn Danker, starting point guard for the Bears, organized a players-only meeting. And, you know, I said, okay, can we talk? Can I tweet this out? Well, no, if you tweet it out, people read that, and it's just without any context, it's just, oh, this is bad. This is going to be a coach bashing, whatever. It got my brain thinking, because you and I've talked a lot about building up culture on your team. And if you have a strong one, then maybe if a player comes to you and says, hey, coach, we want to get the players together, football way different, can't do it in an apartment. If you have a good culture and you trust your leaders, hearing that there's a players only meeting might not be as negative as some perceive that to be. But if it is kind of a nasty culture and you have guys fighting all the time or guys getting on Twitter complaining, whatever, then yeah, when you see players meeting, you can be concerned. So that's why it's so important when you and I have spent hours upon hours talking about getting here. Yeah, you want to win, but you got to fix the culture up first.
That's right. And a players-only meeting in football, in my experience, has always been disaster.
Really?
I think the first thing that maybe some people think is, oh no, they're turning on the coach. They want to have a meeting without the coach.
That's the first thing that goes through my mind.
That's never the case.
Really?
Players, when they do something like this, and again, I'm just speaking from my frame of reference, and then I'll speak a little bit about Smiley and his program, the way he's built it, and I can speak with some confidence on that. So like in my frame of reference, when players do this, there is usually some leadership ability, and they're not going to get anybody to show up to this meeting if they haven't demonstrated leadership ability. So you're not going to get like the ne'er-do-well, complainer, whiner, locker room lawyer type that's going to call a team meeting players only and players are going to show. So this is going to be, as the case with Wisney and Danker and these guys, like these are legit guys that have produced in games. They've demonstrated leadership even to my view, as somebody who's kind of passing them in the hallway and in the weight room. They're outgoing. They're charismatic. This is the opposite of turning on the coach. This is, hey, coaches are doing all they can. We need to talk about what we need to do to get better. And I'm just totally pontificating here.
No, it makes
I haven't
sense.
Talked to any of those players, but knowing the success that Coach Smiley and his staff has had, knowing the success that this team has had, this basketball team, even this year, there's no threat that this is a, hey, we got to do this ourselves because the coaches aren't with us or something like that. That's absurd. The closest I've ever been to that is like at San Diego. I think a lot of the players really didn't love the way Jim Harbaugh approached them. But Jim was just polarizing, and you know, maybe 20% of the players couldn't stand his coaching style, but 80% would die for him. And I learned a lot from Jim in the way that he approached the game and the players. Like if you were about ball, if you were obsessed with football, you love Jim Harbaugh.
Well, and that's what's in any other industry. We were talking about that. Like if I hear that our friend Tanner is like, "Hey Brady, we're going to do a staff meeting, you know, without you," my first thought is, "Oh, that's going to be like 50%, you know, bitch fest about me, probably."
Right.
But in the football aspect, in the team aspect, sometimes. I love that you said that too. Like, hey, we realize the coaches are doing everything they possibly can. They're coaching us up. They're talking to us. They're doing team meetings. We need to have one of those where we just open up as a team without coaches, without putting it on the coaches, you know, without a coach maybe even interjecting. We want to take it upon ourselves to air that out, some frustrations just within our own play, kind of putting it on us more. And with a strong culture, I think those can be very productive. If it's the opposite, then yeah, maybe it turns into a bashing. But I think that's really important you say that a lot of times it can turn into, we know the coaches are doing everything possible. We need to do some soul searching, so to speak.
There is no chance, the Steve Smiley and the staff that I know, there is no chance that any team is ever going to turn on those guys. They're high energy. They're intelligent. I've went and watched practice to learn and observe, take a notepad. They've got the right blend of fun and energy, and you can tell that they work incredibly hard, and that wouldn't be lost on this team, on these players.
Yeah, and that was the first thing with Brock too. I said, like, what is this meeting going to be? Like, what are you guys going to talk about? And it's like, it's not a coach bashing, or it's not a, hey, we're all going to complain about minutes that we have or don't have. I'm curious to know what was said, though. I really am. And Coach Smiley, when I asked him about it, he's kind of the same thing. Like, no, with that group, you don't worry about that kind of stuff. Like, that's not in this situation. That's not in their DNA.
I'm hopeful as a fan that it's what they need right now, and see that turnaround. We've got some recruits coming in this week in a homestand, and we're going to be there and cheering them on, and create a great environment. Of course, I'm rooting for the Bears and personal friends with the Steve and the staff. In football, it never goes well because, you know, everybody needs to understand it. In football, with 105 or 120 or however many guys are on the roster, you always have 10% sociopaths in any given room, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're just going to hijack the meeting. And, you know, basketball, just a much smaller number. A position group in football that has kind of a players-only meeting, that could be a really good thing.
Well, like in football, Coach, you tell me, you know, basketball, how many guys were talking? 12, 15 guys typically?
Yeah, 15 guys, and there's such a clear delineation in basketball of who the guys are. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Where in football, there's a lot of roles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like a running back room, you can have six dudes, you know, that are like, hey, I got more carries last week, but I didn't have as many carries this week.
And such a diverse set of skills in football, right? Like, you've got guys that are some of the best players on our team who have never actually touched a football in a game and never will. Mm-hmm. You got other guys, their whole self-confidence is built on how many times they're targeted or how many times they touch the ball. There's other guys who tackle and others who never will. In basketball, like, you score, you pass, you rebound, everybody does it all, and there's kind of a real hierarchy of, okay, who's delivering, who are some of our best guys, shots are shots, free throw percentage is free throw percentage. It's always the exact same distance to the hoop, and there's no subjectivity, and three-point percentage as well. Like, I just think basketball is way ahead in that way.
With these gigantic rosters that football coaches deal with, I mean, I'm guessing – not everybody on the team is close. I'm guessing there's a good chance that some dudes don't even know the other dude. Like, maybe they barely even talk to that person. Is that fair? Like, they see each other on the field, but they might not have any conversations at all. So getting together for a team meeting could be difficult when you might not know personally even like 30% of the roster.
100%. There are many, many guys on a football team that couldn't tell you the names of everyone else on the team.
Yeah, I would imagine. And that's what would make it tough to have like a players-only meeting in that side. But now we don't talk about the culture as much. And I look at that as being an extremely positive thing for your football program. When we started this podcast, we're talking a lot about drinking. We're talking, you know, not drinking and not staying out late. I mean, you were getting into these discussions and how players would come and talk to you about a poker game. And, you know, you didn't like the idea of staying up late playing poker all night. And they're like, coach, we're not drinking. We're not doing this. So there's compromises that you're working on. Doesn't seem like that's at the top of your mind anymore.
No, it would be falling on deaf ears and there would be unnecessary resentment, which I think there always was a certain subset of the team that was obsessed. I've been talking a lot about the difference between motivation and obsession. Motivation being something that needs to be renewed. A good coach can help renew that and bring culture, bring messages that transcend throughout the season and the seasons. But yet obsession, it doesn't have to be renewed. You know, when a guy's obsessed with football and getting better, those are the kind of guys that actually inspire the coaches to be better coaches. You wake up wondering, okay, how can I be the best coach I can be for this guy? Because you can feel it when you walk in. And I think we just have so many of those guys now that anybody who's not living right, not getting their rest, not getting their recovery, they're just falling too far behind. Mm-hmm. And I can see that. When I took over the program, I didn't pay attention to how many guys got in the portal or anything like that. But Eddie Gonzalez, who was there through the transition, you may know that last week we were running some numbers on how many guys from our program have gotten into the portal this year, how many guys from each of the other Big Sky schools and some of the top teams in the country. And the trend is definitely the lower the number, the better the team. And so we're really happy to be keeping the company that we're keeping right now. We're right in there with Montana, Montana State, UC Davis. On the other side, with about a dozen or so for each of those schools, including us, going into the portal this year, on the other side of that graph is some teams really struggling. Weber State, Portland State, they're in the high 30s. And UNC, the year that I took over, and this was before the portal was getting really popular like it is now for players, there were 38 guys that got in the portal. And then as we were training, as I started to introduce our training methods and our lifts and our runs, there was almost never a guy that wasn't stepping out to throw up in the bushes. You know, it was like, what is going on here? We just don't have that anymore. You know, the guys are showing up early. They're staying later. They're lifting on their own. They've got the jugs machine out. Their quarterbacks are keeping receivers out. All positions. It's just a completely different culture. And so if I'm going to be lecturing at the guys, I better find something new and pertinent for this moment. And that feels great. And then the biggest indication, I know it's a long answer
to your prompt here.
The biggest indication to me is what I always told the guys it would be. We've gone from about a 2.4 GPA, team GPA, to about a 3.4, a whole point. And
that's hard to do.
That's incredibly difficult to do. And my message all along to the boys has been, hey, our team GPA is X, right? Let's say it's 2.8. Team GPA is 2.8. You're either a 2.9 and bringing us up, or you're 2.7 and below and bringing us down. Well, now that is tremendous pressure. You've got to be a 3.5 to be bringing our team GPA up. A 3.3 and you're dragging us down. I love that right now, what's going on with the team.
Yeah, and that's so important too, because yes, they are still student athletes, and that is, in most cases, that's the most important part of it. You know, fans will say something different. I'll say something different depending on the week, probably. But at the end of the day, when these parents that are listening to this podcast are like, our kid gets to go, you know, he's going to get an education, plus he gets to do something he loves, seeing, hey, that's something that's important to the coach is to raise that GPA up. That's huge. That sets you up for a life outside of football once your football career is done.
If you've listened to this podcast or the morning show that I do with the guys, you know, say, what kind of program is UNC football right now? Developmental program. Anyone would say that. You know, you might need a multiple choice to figure that out, but that everybody's going to recognize that as, oh yeah, that's what Lamb's always talking about. Well, if guys are fixed in their mindset or resistant, they're not going to develop. And guys that get good grades, guys that put the work in the classroom, those are guys that are developable. They respond to authority. They put the work in. And so I couldn't be more pleased on that side. That to me is a major indicator of where we're going.
What I really loved, and this helped me get some insight, because I can walk out to practice, but you're seeing dudes in helmets and stuff, and you gave me so much access to be able to walk out on the field, almost stand right next to you, and I just feel like a tiny little human with all these tall people and shoulder pads. But that's really cool, and I love that. But over the summer, or maybe it was around spring, well, I don't remember the timelines, but you brought in, I don't know, 20 to 30 different guys, you know, throughout the podcast. These guys are showing up. They're beating me here, you know, which I know that sometimes that happens. They're all sitting down ready to go for the podcast. And every one of them, you know, just they were so delightful when I walked away, the conversations we had. But what I was impressed with was the things that they were into. Most of these guys are saying, like, I like to fish. I like to, you know, I like to mountain climb. I like to golf, whatever. You're not hearing a whole ton of, you know, sit around late at night and play Fortnite, or, you know, I like to go out. And again, they might not say that on the podcast, but that was something that opened my eyes too. When you're talking about a culture, these guys all willing to come in and do this. We do this really early Wednesdays. And for a college student, even a football player, to come and do a podcast that early can be difficult. None of these guys looked pissed off to be here.
Yeah, I think on the one hand, I want to say it would be exciting for any young man to be able to do something like this, right?
Yeah.
To get into a studio and do something like a podcast or live radio. And so I think that's part of it. But I do know, you know, to whatever degree guys might come in here and treat it like an interview and present their best selves, put their best foot forward for a day, GPA doesn't lie.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm just so pleased about, is where these guys are going. Community service events, that doesn't lie. And our team they're competing to be the top of the team in community service. We track that. We track our community service. We send out kind of the bat signal and when we have an event going on, and then we track the guys that show up and partake of that. And when it comes down to minute decisions about scholarship or even depth chart, you know, if the talent is close, we're going to go with the guy who's more invested in this community.
Yeah, and I love to hear that too. When you first walked on to campus and when you first start meeting your team, how does a culture change really happen? And I know we've talked about that a lot, but is that a thing that you just do, or is that one of those things like natural over time? Because you've talked about this, learning about certain players. Hey, there were guys that you found out were working at certain areas that maybe weren't great. They were staying out extremely late. You start hearing these stories. Do you go in day one with the intentions of, man, I got work to do. How do I change the culture? Or is that something that's just kind of an organic thing that the process takes maybe, you know, a year or two, and it's kind of an organic thing. It's not a forced culture fix.
This is going to be a little bit of a lengthy answer. I think it has everything to do with the resources for the program. I don't know if you've seen, there's a little bit of kind of, I don't want to call it controversy, maybe drama coming out, because the Indiana president and athletic director have started to say, hey, like, we hired Sig in 2024 and he's amazing, but we decided we were going to change as a football program in 2021, right? Mm-hmm. She said, the president said that. And they did. They put a lot of resources in. And so the idea, and same with like Coach Prime at Colorado, they came in with some resources and said, I'm not going to deal with all these players who think the coaches was the problem. We're cleaning house. We're bringing in a whole new team. That's the new era of college football. We couldn't do that at UNC. We don't have the resources to do that. Portal players cost money, right, for the most part, unless you're bringing a guy back home or he has some other reason that he wants to be here or is just a complete unknown for some reason and flying way under the radar, which doesn't really happen in the portal. All those kids are being evaluated by huge teams of player personnel evaluators. Yeah. We had to just keep who we had. And it also sits very well with the way I want to build a football program. You know, to have some rough stretches in the early part of my career here on the field, wins, loss-wise, I don't want to say it's worth it, but I can say that in the end, as I look back and say, look, we never cut anybody that showed up every day and worked hard and poured into it. We never got rid of anybody. We never pushed anybody into the portal that, you know, that towed the line and met our expectations. When it all comes to fruition and we get this program to where we envision it, at that point to look back, and even if it's just a handful of players off that very first roster that I quote-unquote saved because of the way we do it here, that I'm still in touch with 20 years from now, and they're appreciative of that situation, that makes me feel like the educator that I got into the business to be. You know, there's a ton of guys, most guys are getting into the business of coaching right now to coach. Like, there's a lot more money than there used to be. When I got into coaching, you it was like being a public teacher. There wasn't even major college coaches, they didn't make a whole lot of money. That's changed now, and so the motivation to get into it has changed. But when me and my peers all got into the business at our age, we expected to be teachers. We weren't sure if we were going to do high school, junior college, college, and you know, just opportunities arose where they have. But I still consider that a really important part of my purpose is to be an educator and help these guys get their lives going.
No, it's been really fun and fascinating and educational to kind of learn about this process from the beginning to where we sit now, where last year we looked at the games. You know, you had a lot more wins than the year before, the most wins in almost 10 years, I believe, or close to it. And then obviously a lot of the close games too. So when you start looking at the culture change and you see those other things, oh, it's starting to show itself on the field a little bit. And that's really cool.
It is, and our players are proud. You know, they're proud to be Bears right now. They're disappointed in some of the results or the season total results, but there's a high level of motivation and belief right now, and it's really fun to be a part of.
Coach, now, you know, as we talk here, it's the 28th day of January. What does the schedule look like right now? What are the guys up to? We're not that far from spring ball, as we talked about, but what does kind of the day-to-day look like for your team?
Coaches right now are being pulled in all directions, especially over the last about 2 week period. We had kind of our window to add transfers, either junior college or portal guys. We had that closing up rapidly, and so we were working on that part of recruiting. Also, the high school recruiting has been ongoing, and that's leading to the culmination of the signing date, or at least the last signing date in early February. And so we're finishing up that part of recruiting. We have several players making official visits this week, last week. That takes a lot of time, energy, and effort. And then we've got our players that have reported back and are now in week three of winter conditioning. That takes a lot of our time, energy, and effort. We also practice year-round now. Like, we play football twice a week, 11-on-11. No pads. It's non-contact. But that's different than it was 10 years ago. That wasn't allowed 10 years ago. And so we have to prepare. We have to prepare practice plans. We have to get out there and coach on the field. It gets videoed, and then we you know, watch that video and grade the players. So there's a ton going on right now from a coaching standpoint. And then I think I just kind of introduced what the players are going on, what's going on for them too. Is they're training, they're jockeying for spots on the depth chart, leadership starting to arise. They're going to school, the most important piece of what they're doing, and trying to balance all the things in a young person's life, socially, academically, their family life back home, their spiritual life. There's a ton going on, and this is the most critical time of year for building the team. Like, what they do now sets them up for spring ball. Spring ball sets them up for the success in the fall.
How much of, like, installing offenses or reinstalling or introducing new concepts offensively, defensively, special teams are you doing right now?
Yeah, we have our base, you know, fundamental philosophies, which we've recruited to, and now going into year four, okay, we know we're going to have the type of people to play man-to-man coverage on defense, right? And so we're not going to really change and experiment in that way. But outside of that kind of core philosophy on offense and defense, offensively, it would be about big, massive offensive line and a stable full of ball carriers, right? Like, that's how we're going to be built on offense and defense. Outside of that, there's another thing that the coaches are really working hard on right now is, okay, what is our current talent levels? Where are some of our opportunities? What's going on in the game of football? What did we do well last year? And how might we pivot a bit this year? And all of that has to go on simultaneously with all the recruiting and training of the current guys and dealing with what's going on in their lives. So it is a very, very busy time of year, and we feel pulled in all directions.
Do you foresee somewhat big changes on the offensive side of the ball? Obviously, last year you started the season with Castelli. That was supposed to be, hey, this is more of a mobile quarterback. We're designing our play calling around that. Gibson Jr., a different quarterback, more of a pocket passer, so you kind of had to make that change on the fly last mm-hmm. year. We've talked about a lot of quarterbacks, and I know we'll get some specifics in that in a couple weeks on the QBs, but there's been a few guys on this list where it's like they can move around a little bit. Do you see kind of making that full-on transition to more of a, we're setting our offense up to kind of revolve around a mobile quarterback?
Well, I think we have the opportunity to make sure that it's centered on the offensive line, on the line of scrimmage, and that's all of the successes that I've had, whether we've had great quarterbacks, you know, all conference guys, drafted guys, or, you know, guys that just kind of, you know, took care of the football and managed the game, so to speak. The great teams always start on the line of scrimmage, and we have not achieved consistent balance on offense at any point in my time here. By consistent, I mean, you know, a 3-4 game stretch where we could run the ball at will and throw the ball or pass the ball to be more aggressive or to take advantage of opportunities that we see. We've been in large part kind of surviving with whatever we could in any given moment, sometimes leading to success, sometimes leading to frustration. I think we are going to be able to base this thing around a big physical veteran offensive line.
Well, let's talk about that. Yeah. You set me right up for it. That just so happens to be kind of the position group that we're going to focus on a bit today. You know, obviously, if you're listening to this, you're new to the podcast, whatever, just learning who left and who's coming back and how many starters are returning. So can we kind of get into that, just looking at, you know, a rough idea of what the offensive line depth chart position group looks like?
Yeah, that conversation's got to start with Jack Z-Bell. Z-Ball is what the boys call him. That's kind of his nickname. But he started since his true freshman year. Parents went to UNC. He's not from Colorado, but his parents have since moved to Colorado now. And so he's like, he is a local guy. He's a legacy guy. And the highest rated, you know, for whatever PFF is worth, right? Pro Football Focus and the ratings that they put out on players, there are a lot of the portal is really driven by PFF rankings. And so a guy like Jack could have had big opportunities in the portal, but Jack has always treated this like his best opportunity to develop to his fullest potential. He's an NFL prospect, and I think when he made it clear, I'm coming back for my senior year, I think all the other offensive linemen that may have been thinking about what kind of opportunities are out there are like, well, Jack's staying, I'm staying. You know, so tremendous gratitude for his approach. And then, you know, Levi Johnson, another guy that's been starting since his freshman year, massive 6'6". He's up to about 315 pounds right now.
That's a big dude right there.
Yeah, training to be an engineer, super smart. I want to give a shout out to his grandfather, Jan. Jan is Hawaiian ancestry and speaks Hawaiian, and so I speak Tongan. I don't hear Tongan very well, so I want to be clear. I don't want to act like I'm crazy fluent, right? But I can read it a bit. I study it a lot, and I just enjoy it kind of like the same way somebody might enjoy a crossword puzzle. I don't have a lot of chances to speak it, but I just enjoy having my mind work on something for a few minutes every day that's new to me, and I feel like it keeps my mind going. well, there are a lot of similarities in Hawaiian and Tongan, and so he will often text me a Hawaiian message. And he's been, Jan, Levi's grandfather, has been so encouraging through so many hard times. There have been times when he wouldn't realize this, but he's just kind of kept me going. You know, like after a tough loss, he's got a knack for timing and what to say. So I've really appreciated
that's awesome.
Levi's whole family. And
shout out to, grandfather Jan.
Yeah, that's Jan. Awesome. J-A-N, pronounced Jan. Those two guys definitely anchor it. But like other guys, like Lincoln Faupuli's been, you know, he's been starting since he was a freshman. Now he's going to be going into his junior year, one of the biggest, strongest guys in the country at a full 6'5 and 320 pounds, works incredibly hard, and he's just maturing as a person, as a student athlete. That's been amazing to see. We have Colton Patterson started some games last year. Montre Strickland has started games on the offensive line. Those guys really will be a big part of what's going on. Zion Salvao, another Colorado kid who started last year as a true freshman, started three games as a true freshman. Andreas Guillory, and again, Colorado kid, still a young player in our program, but I think he's going to step up and add some real depth. So I think all of these guys that I've mentioned to you, Montre's a Colorado guy, Lincoln's a Colorado guy, Levi's a Colorado guy. Z-Bell came from Texas, but again, has those UNC roots. A.J. Burton is going to really be in the mix as well. He got hurt last year, was starting for us. He got hurt in the Colorado State game. He transferred back to us from Iowa State after having gone to Iowa State out of Cherry Creek as a senior. We're starting to see a lot of that where guys are tracking us through the portal back to come home to Colorado because we have Colorado kids on this roster. They know them, respect them, and they see what's going on. And then Colton Patterson, I mentioned him too. He's another from Lakewood, Green Mountain High School. I think there's that regional cohesiveness. There's that pride in representing UNC and the state of Colorado. And it's more so in the offensive line than anywhere else on the team. As much as we've tried to build this team with the local or in-state players, I think the offensive line is really leading that charge right now.
Well, and what's fascinating, we've talked about them being a strength, obviously, and that's what you want, is you want your offensive line to be a strength for your goals, for what you want to do. When you see a guy like Jack, and that just kind of shows you how linked the offensive line really is. When you see Jack come back, and then the rest of these guys kind of say, if he's coming back,
yeah,
I'm coming back. We want to keep this thing together. That's really cool to see. That just shows you how connected this group is.
Absolutely. And you got Jack from certainly from all standpoints. But in Levi's case, too, Levi would have incredible opportunities. All those guys that I talked about would have some really big opportunities if they chose to go in the portal. It's not necessarily the best thing. A couple of years ago, we had one of our best offensive linemen in my second year here who he went into the portal. He got a quote-unquote good opportunity. I don't want to give too much information and seem like I'm running him down, but he never played again. Mm. And so, like, being good enough to play at a Power 4 or a G5, that's not the criteria to leave. The criteria really should be, how are you going to develop yourself best as a football player, student, athlete, NFL prospect, all of the above, right? And it may not be to leave. And Levi, I think, is another one because he's so academic oriented. All the guys know, like, hey, if you want to be successful in life, if you want to have successful friends, wealthy friends, stay in touch with Levi, right? Like, he's so intelligent. He's got his future mapped out.
Going to be an engineer.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and doing it from UNC, which we technically don't have engineering, right? But he's just like, when we were recruiting him, he's like, well, I want to play Division I football. And can't get an engineering degree, at least in the field I want to go into, with a bachelor's degree anyway, so that's a waste of time. I'm going to get my bachelor's degree here, my master's degree at an engineering school. And, you know, he just, to have it all mapped out, he kind of almost recruited himself that way.
It's
and
crazy.
Then to not flinch along the way and be, simultaneously such a high performer in the academic and athletic, on the academic and athletic side, he's just an incredible example for our guys.
I'm excited. I know maybe at some point we'll start getting players back in here too, but getting the O-line in here, yeah, because they're a riot, man, because yeah, they are so intelligent. Last year when we did this, guys were excellent to talk to. And those have been, you know, those guys have been through a lot. When you talk about your quarterback changes and, you know, a lot of different running back options you're going through, they've been through a lot. For them to stay connected and ready to load up for another season is huge for this program.
They've got a lot to prove on the field, and we got a long way to go and some weeks and months to get there. But I wouldn't trade them for any line. This has been homegrown, built in the weight room. Built on the field. They've got a great culture going. Coach Nissen's doing a great job with those guys, our offensive line coach, and they have all of the potential to be the best offensive line in the country.
Do you look at that then and say that's the number one? And we didn't do this on purpose. Is that the number one strength of this team today as we sit here and talk?
That is, yeah. Culturally, you know, as the offensive line goes, the rest of the groups go. We can have an all-conference caliber quarterback, and if you can't protect him, he's not going to look very good. Same with the receiver. If the quarterback doesn't look good and he's not protected, then your receivers aren't going to be doing very well either. Running backs, obviously, and frankly, defense. It is really difficult. You know, we watched the Broncos have an amazing defense this year. Mm-hmm. I think in this last playoff game, sure, it was tough for anybody to do much with the weather in particular, right? So it ended up being a low-scoring game. But just to survive low-scoring game after low-scoring game all season long, you just can't do that. Like, defense will wear out, if not in games during the season. You have to have an offensive group that can move the ball consistently, move the chains, score, keep your team in games, and it all starts with the offensive line.
I'm pumped to learn more as we kind of round out what the depth chart looks like. You guys dealt with a lot of injuries at that position last year too, so a lot of the younger guys got a lot of extra playing time.
We did,
making them, you know, the transition to the next season a little bit easier. Coach, as we kind of wrap up here, we brought up the story, the Alabama story, and it's basketball, but Betty Ocko, it's a wild story, but he elected to go to the NBA, didn't actually play an NBA minute, but he did play in the G League. And now it looks like, you know, he's already playing. He's going back to school, which is wild. That affects so many different things. But then I look at that and say, wow, how is that allowed? The guy left college and now coming back, that's going to affect high school recruits. If this is allowed, if this is something we start seeing, even at the NFL level. And then we have Eric Gibson Jr. And it's one of the most disappointing stories that I know about, and I'm lucky to know you because I got to learn that story locally. But the guy is told he has a roster spot at LSU, enrolls in LSU, and then they say, well, never mind, we don't. Sorry, we did that to a lot of people. And the NCAA is actually using that and counting that against him, which is why he's not the starting quarterback or a quarterback for the UNC Bears in the 2026 season.
It's so disappointing and somewhat predictable in this day and age where the NCAA is changing so fast, the rules are changing so fast. The NCAA is also a little bit afraid to block things that they might have blocked in the past or legislated against because they've been beaten down in the courts so much to give these players their rights, their freedom, rights to name, image, and likeness, rights to be in a place, rights to have eligibility. So the sports, the more established international sports have a huge advantage, and football is so far behind in so many ways in terms of guardrails, and this is a great example. So you have these basketball players that are playing in the G League, and now they're coming back, whereas football, because there's really not an establishment of what constitutes an unfair advantage. So, like, for example, if you're a gymnast or you're a swimmer in Germany and you're the NCAA is trying to determine whether you've played a high level of competition that should count against a year of NCAA eligibility. It's fairly simple. There are tiers on these international established Olympic sports, including basketball, and it's really clear, and the NCAA can kind of get behind a certain guardrail, right? Well, Leo Blumentritt, I mean, Eric's decision, the decision the NCAA made on Eric Gibson is absurd, and we've talked about it before, but Leo Blumentritt, our punter from last year, he should have another year of eligibility. And the NCAA determined that one of the years that he played rec league football in Germany, and let me tell you about some of this rec league, he had to buy his own equipment, completely mismatched, helmets of all colors on the team, et cetera. They had to line the field themselves, and they didn't even have, like, lasers or strings to do it. So it was like eyeballed. They're lining the field.
Wow.
They have, there's a minimum player requirement of 16. And so Leo's team once traveled to a nearby village, and we're playing against this other team that didn't quite have enough. They only had nine. So they went to the local park and found some kids skateboarding and brought them over and threw helmets on them. They just stood on the sideline. No shoulder pads, no nothing, just helmets, which satisfied the rule requirement so that both teams could then play. And they actually swapped some players so they could just play tackle football, right? Like, this is such low-level competition, and the NCAA penalized them a year for
it. And they're counting that?
The NCAA counting that. And not counting the G League. Like,
Oh my!
You know, if there was actually a way to walk into an NCAA office as a coach and start wrecking shop, I would do it on behalf of Leo and everybody else who's getting hosed by the NCAA, because football is just so far behind. The understanding of it is so far behind. Whereas other sports, I think there's just a greater understanding of by people who are making some of those tough decisions.
Both those stories are just so obvious. Like, no, that shouldn't count.
Yeah.
Playing in Germany when you can't even field a team, like, that doesn't count as a Division I year of eligibility.
Right.
Eric Gibson, you were told you were going to play. You didn't actually play, but you spent money going to that college and you fed the beast, so to speak, and they're going to count that as a year of eligibility. I don't know how. I've messaged Eric just saying, man, I'm sorry to hear that. He has such a great attitude about everything. I would just be furious all the time. I'd be fighting this thing, and I know that takes a lot of time and resources too, and a lot of guys just don't want to mess with it, but it's awful, Coach.
It is. You know Eric, he's unflappable. He demonstrated that many times, and he did handle it the right way. He handled it, I can tell you, he handled it a lot better than me and Rachel Walton, our senior women administrator, who was critical in the appeal efforts, and she put together a great appeal, and it's just... it's a no-brainer. They chose to punish Eric because of LSU's error. It was terrible.
Well, and even when, and you've talked about this, even LSU came to the table and said, "Yeah, we're vouching for Eric Gibson Jr. He should get another year of eligibility," and that still didn't work.
The current athletic director at LSU threw that coaching staff under the bus and said they messed up.
Wow,
they screwed this kid. He should have another year.
It's just a terror. And that was the first thing that hit my brain when we're looking at the Bediako story. I'm like, wait, this is happening, but we can't get Eric Gibson Jr. or a kid that played in Germany, couldn't field a, they couldn't field a competition, so they had to go get dudes off the street to come in, and those are counting?
I'll tell you the absurdity. It's wild. I'll tell you the absurdity. When Rachel reached back out to the NCAA and like, what are you talking about? The NCAA said, well, we couldn't find any language that would support him getting another year. And Rachel, to her credit, said, that's the whole point of an appeal, that we're literally making a case for a new precedent based on the absurdity of this current situation, and you're going back to the original rule. The original ruling should have been about the original rule, the current writing of the law. This is something outside of that. That's the whole point of an appeal, isn't it? And at that point, they just kind of shut her down and ended the conversation.
And it's 100% over. It's, I mean, his Division I, like, there's no...
Yeah, I mean,
there's no opening it back up.
At this point, it would, and I told Eric, like, you're going to have to, like, hire outside, an outside attorney, go the Diego Pavia route. Like, do you want that? Is it worth it? Are you, you have some opportunities here that, and the window closes quickly on those. What do you want to do? And not surprisingly, Eric said, well, it's the game that's important. I don't want to risk not playing at all.
Yeah.
So he went to, I think he's at California University, Pennsylvania.
Well, we'll be rooting for that guy.
Always.
Excited to see what he can do. But great young man. Coach, we covered it all, man. We actually got to every bullet point we were set to talk about. So
you're the man.
I'm pumped about it. Next week, position group. Do we want to take a look at where you want to go? Tight ends?
It's going to be, if we stay with that theme, this thing is built around on the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
That's what we've set out to do from day one. It's the most difficult position groups to build. And I'm so proud that will be our foundation, will be on that offensive and defensive line. So I think that would be a great place to pivot to.
All right,
with your permission.
Yep. it's Football 52 starring Ed Lamb. I'm just here hanging out, Coach. Always appreciate it, my friend. And we'll look forward to catching up with you next week.
Likewise.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb. And I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.